I think a lot of what I do on Instagram is mostly just like living my life. And then I think sharing certain things that I feel like aren't shared enough. And so trying to normalize things, like whenever I go get like STI checkups, and I try to do that every like 2 to 3 months, I'll post about it just to try to like, I don't know, expose more people to the fact that you can talk about this and it's not shameful. And even like if you do test positive for something, that's not the end of the world. And there are options, and this doesn't have to be super stigmatized. You know, the more stigmatized and shameful things are, the less people are able to find resources about it. And so the less people are able to take care of themselves or take care of the people around them.
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. The world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum. This is the best of the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ada, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Bruce Poinsett Show watchers. This is Ado here. Just letting you know, the first half of this interview, something happened with the video footage. It got a little bit corrupted, and just like it was not usable until like about the 10-minute mark. So for this interview, you're going to see pretty pictures of the guests and, of course, our host, Bruce, here. And then once that around the 10-minute mark hits, it transitions back into the normal interview. Deeply apologize. We figured out the issue after the interview was recorded. Everything's all good moving forward. But wanted to let y'all know, thank you for bearing with us, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome back to the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I have a special guest with me today, Michelle High, polyamorous content creator, and, you know, just very, you know, I don't want to call you an influencer because I feel like we all shudder when we hear that, but also person with an influence for real.
A little bit of influence. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I have to admit that.
Michelle, how are you doing today?
Pretty good. Battling the heat, you know, typical Portlander.
So, you know, I first came across your work through the Polyamorous While Asian page, and, you know, again, it's just like an access to an entry point for the conversation. And also, you know, I think you plug people into a lot of resources and a lot of, you know, education, both about ethical non-monogamy, but then just kind of stuff that's just great for like relationships in general. But can you just talk about the story of how the page came together? And if, you know, you hear this cliche about being the person you want to see, but at the same time, like, was that part of, I guess, like what kind of like inspired you?
Yeah, let's go back in time to 2020, our favorite year. February 2020, a whole different world. But yeah, it was literally at the end of February. I think I was trying to look up Asian people who are polyamorous, because I follow a lot of like Black polyamorous people, and I feel like the intersections of like Black community, polyamorous community, with regard to more marginalized identities, relatively pretty strong, a lot of like representation. And of course there could always be more, but I wanted to see if there are other Asian people, and I didn't see that. And so I thought, maybe I could, you know, give it a shot. So I created the Polyamorous While Asian page, and originally it was maybe supposed to be just like a Finsta, you know, just like I just vomit random thoughts related to polyamory, politics, or whatever, separate from just my personal page. But then certain things started getting traction, and I was like, oh, okay. All right. Just sharing my story, sharing different aspects, you know, with regard to like sex or kink or relationships. And yeah, I mean, the rest of 2020, you know, everyone suddenly, for some reason, found themselves just inside a lot. And yeah, the page just kind of blew up a little bit from there. And here we are. Yeah.
And, you know, as someone, again, who's like a public figure in this space, like, what are some common misconceptions that people bring to you about ethical non-monogamy and polyamory?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, oh God, we could have like a misconception bingo, really. and the free space could be someone saying, oh, I could never do that. but yeah, certain things where it's just like, non-monogamy is, you know, maybe monogamy with extra steps. It's only for cheaters. It's not a legitimate or sustainable way to go. It's only about sex. You can't have strong connections, romantic connections with more than one person at the same time. You know, people are maybe naturally jealous, and so non-monogamy can never work. Or there are people who go the, you know, the nature route where it's like, oh, humans are just built to be monogamous. And it's the one right way. There's so many misconceptions. But those are probably some of the most popular ones, the greatest mm-hmm. hits. Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking earlier about just, like representation. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I know I was definitely one of those people who, you know, thought when I hear polyamory in Portland, I think white people.
Yes. Like, yep.
And, mm-hmm. you know, even some of the, you know, like things that were like shared with me, like earlier, it would usually be like these white spaces and conversations where it's like, I don't see myself mm-hmm. like that. But I think something that was kind of like really cool you were doing, you're just doing like a series where you're talking to all these different people, different mm-hmm. backgrounds, different genders, different, you know, sexual orientations about their experience and their stories and just like presenting all these different faces. I think there's something about that, again, not just like the stories itself, but something you talk about a lot is just how ethical non-monogamy is political.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like even again that representation space, that's just one way, but can you just talk a little bit more about that concept? Because I think again we think about relationships, we think about some of this stuff is like it's not innocuous, but like mm-hmm. we separate it from that conversation when it's all tied together,
right? I mean, monogamy, non-monogamy, all relationships like exist within a political sphere. Like we mm-hmm. don't exist in a vacuum. So even monogamy, the like status quo, even that is affected by politics. And yeah, so non-monogamy, there's, you know, discussion of whether or not non-monogamy is inherently political. I would say that, of course, there are a lot of people who don't move through that space actively, in an actively political way. But again, it doesn't exist in a vacuum. There are definitely differences in the way non-monogamous relationships are treated, not just by individuals, but systemically versus monogamous relationships, especially monogamous relationships between like two cishet white people who are married, mm. You know, class plays a factor as well. And so, yeah, there are certain things, like, for example, a lot of non-monogamous people, families have to think very carefully when it comes to involving like children, like childcare.
Right.
You know, there have been cases in which, you know, like CPS or something will take kids away because they're like, you know, three adults living under the same roof who are in a ethical, healthy relationship together, but it's seen as abomination feels like a dramatic word, but that's the word that's coming up to mind right now. It's seen as harmful to children. And especially I feel like these days with a lot of politics that are like, oh, we're thinking about the family. It's about the family, you know, and especially about the nuclear family, getting back to traditional roots and all that bullshit. And this is the only way to have a healthy society and healthy people or whatnot. So yeah, there is no way to separate relationships from politics. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you just touched on a lot of important things there as far as, and even when you just think about how bills are spread out, you know, mentioned childcare before, just because on one hand, it's all that time arguing against that this is an abomination, you know, all this, anything outside of the, what's the word I'm looking for? The nuclear quo. Family, yes. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you know, it's a threat, I guess.
Honestly. Right. It's a threat. Exactly. Like the existence of something outside of the norm. I think, you know, it's almost like can be tied into like, you know, thinking about colonialism and things like that, where it's like, well, the only way that they know how to exist is through the subjugation of other, mm-hmm. of others, and through, like, making others assimilate or just disappear. Mm-hmm. And so they think that like, oh, the rise of non-monogamous people means that they're going to try to eradicate monogamy, and they're going to force everyone into these like orgiastic cults where there's no privacy and, all that good stuff.
Orgiastic
cults. Yeah.
Sorry.
Right. Where no one has any morals, we're godless and depraved and ultimately selfish, and we're going to be part of the downfall of society, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about that, because like a lot of the content you do is also very, very sex positive. Mm-hmm. But so much about like non-monogamy, specifically ethical non-monogamy, that's just, it's boring stuff.
It's very boring. Like a lot of it is really mundane, where it's like, you know, there are some people who like, you go to play parties or whatever every weekend, but sometimes it's just like yesterday, just like me having dinner with a partner and his wife, sharing pizza together, mm-hmm. you know, sharing pizza and talking about work. So a lot of it's really boring, nice and boring.
Yeah. And it's like, again, there's asexual people.
Absolutely.
Polyamorous. There's, mm-hmm. it comes in all different shapes, sizes, mm-hmm. expressions, etc.
Yeah.
But that said, how white is the Portland polyamorous space?
Oh, because my God.
I have my perceptions, but.
I mean, almost every community in Portland will be mostly white, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, going back to the misconceptions, it's like a large misconception is that it's just white people shit. Mm-hmm. And like I talked to Kevin Patterson one time, and he wrote the book Love's Not Colorblind, and he's in Philadelphia. And even with the demographics of Philadelphia being very different from the demographics of Portland, it's still mostly white people who are in the polyamorous community, like publicly in the polyamorous community out there. But yeah, in Portland, very, very white. You know, a lot of nice people in the public community here, but very often I will be like one of the only like people of color in a public space, in like a meetup or something. And it's, it's always noticeable. Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you navigate that? Cause I imagine just with that comes things like tokenization, mm-hmm. fetishization, and, you know, just a lot of stuff that, you know, we experience in any space out here. Cause like you said, anywhere you go is usually very white, mm-hmm, in Oregon, mm-hmm. in Portland.
Yeah.
But especially when it comes to your identity and your, you're in a space where you're trying to make connections with people or,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're right. On the more blatantly negative end, you know, there is like tokenization, fetishization, and always having to be on alert for that. Like, I don't feel like I can often just relax in a space. I feel like I always have to kind of be vigilant about that. But also on the other end, which on the outset doesn't feel quite as bad, but it's still like, I can't relax in these spaces. I mean, we've talked about Atlanta a lot, but like those episodes in which like those like the good white people, you know, the allies who are trying to portray themselves as allies very aggressively and also in a way that actually defeats the quote unquote allyship. That will happen a lot. Where it's like, oh gosh, yeah, us white people are so bad. Oh my goodness. The white guilt and people like tripping over themselves in order to perform this allyship. Again, you know, it isn't as like blatantly negative as just like full on racism or something. But it's still, I think, in my experience, prevents myself from feeling like I can be more authentic in this space. Mm-hmm. And so end up having to do a bit of emotional labor in a way, without trying to compromise myself by like, I don't know, attending to these well-meaning people's, I don't know, confessions and performance and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I think about that, even just something as like small as like going on a dating app. And like you said, being on alert, because like going to bio and you'll see BLM, land back, right, trans rights or human rights. And you're like, mm-hmm, yes, but also, are you one of those white people?
Right, right. Yeah. Like
you're always on guard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's very unfortunate because, yeah, when I see on a person's profile, a white person's profile, that like they've traveled to China or something, or they are like super into anime. And it's these things that like are often fairly innocuous, but just enough people have kind of ruined it for the majority of people that I have to be a little on guard, where it's like, how much do you like anime? Like, what does this look like in your life? And what would it look like around me?
Like this isn't directly related to relationships, but I've had the same thing with a Tribe Called Quest. Where certain white people really like, I love Tribe, but certain white people get too enthusiastic and just bring Tribe up out of nowhere. And it's just like,
okay,
like, how have you done the impossible? You made me not want to listen to Midnight Marauders. Like, this is not good, but get that feeling though. It's I just walked into, I'm not going to say the space, but just walk in. So I was like, God, yeah. Have I told you about that time I saw Tribe? There's like several other times. go on. They're great. Yes.
Yeah.
Bring it back though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we also talked again about just doing like a bunch of like sex positive content. And I think especially interesting right now, you see all this, you know, just puritanical things happening in school systems. And one of the, you know, consistent things I've heard, even though a lot of stuff I do engagement wise around schools, it's usually around like either journalism or racial justice stuff, but you also hear the other things of like, what are students looking for? What's missing? I hear sex ed a lot, all the time, which isn't a surprise because I went to school. I remember how we learned about, you know, fertilizing eggs, and the teacher, shout out to him, he was actually a great guy, but he taught us it through the guise of Star Wars. And it was like, it's
interesting.
So it's a weird way to learn about how the human body works, but okay.
Yeah.
And like in this world where there is so much just trying to censor whatever sex ed there is out there, you know, I do see like creators like yourself who are almost like filling a void that makes sense. I don't know. Have you ever thought about it that way?
I think like you were saying earlier, like the, you know, the be the change you want to see in the world sort of thing. I think a lot of what I do on Instagram is mostly just like living my life. And then I think sharing certain things that I feel like aren't shared enough. And so trying to normalize things, like whenever I go get like STI checkups, and I try to do that every like 2 to 3 months, I'll post about it just to try to like, I don't know, expose more people to the fact that you can talk about this and it's not shameful. Mm. And even like if you do test positive for something, that's not the end of the world. And there are options, and this doesn't have to be super stigmatized. You know, the more stigmatized and shameful things are, the less people are able to find resources about it. And so the less people are able to take care of themselves or take care of the people around them. And so like, yes, you know, it's kind of fun sharing sexy stories or, you know, kind of talking almost deliberately in like a crass way, you know, it's kind of fun. But at the same time, like it can really help a lot of people. I think just little by little, like seeing more and more openness in conversation, seeing more and more, like I think I have certain set of privileges in which I don't think that I would face a lot of backlash, you know, like in my personal life, being more public. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I can feel more comfortable talking very openly about a lot of different things. And a lot of people can't do that. A lot of people have to stay, you know, they can't come out. But being able to see more people being able to be kind of out and just existing, I think is super important. And yeah, so it's like the balance of like, it's fun, but also I do believe that, I don't know, it, again, it feels dramatic to say like, it saves lives. I'm saving lives, but, I think it is an important, it's just an important resource. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. And you just talk about like normalizing STI tests, mm-hmm. like, yeah, that's a conversation I haven't seen like just out there like that until mm-hmm. very recently. Like it's a measurable, I mean, I don't have the statistics as far as mm-hmm. like how many people are following up on that, but you know, we're talking about just health.
Right. And there are a lot of things where it's just like, we have the technology today to just take, you know, antibiotics for a week and it's done, you mm-hmm. know, like it's over with, and it's no different really than a cold. And only difference is because it's can be transmitted through the dirty sex. Mm-hmm. And and we live in such a puritanical society that just because of that association, it's seen as shameful. It's like, oh, you got laid? Oh, screw you for getting sick, for being like close to somebody mm-hmm. and doing something that you mutually enjoy. How dare you? You should die because you got chlamydia. Like I...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you saw that kind of like you say that dramatically, but that's really
it is.
That's
the response it really out there. Is, and it's so mind-boggling. And I remember the first time that I got like chlamydia several years ago. I still had some of that programming because, you know, talking about sex ed, where it is kind of like, you know, like Mean Girls, where it's like if you have sex, you will die. You will get pregnant, you will die. That sort of fear mongering. It's just so unhelpful. It's so unhelpful. It does much more harm than good. And, you know, like, thank goodness for resources like Planned Parenthood and whatnot. But yeah, all this fear mongering, and it's all about control. And again, in that thing of like, you know, nothing is nothing escapes the political sphere. Like it's all politics. It's all political. It's all, yeah, the distribution of power and resources, information. It's all connected. We should, I don't know. I wish I could snap my fingers and we could all get over it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you talked a little bit earlier about having that platform and how people receive it. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, like the feedback you've gotten or like how people have received the page, received the content now that it's been, you know, 3 years.
Oh gosh. Yeah. 3 years. I mean, I think part of it also is that, especially in the past year or so, I haven't been trying to like grow the page. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a lot of people who come back who actually want to engage with my content in a good faith way. And so I feel fortunate that I get a lot of that, a lot of people interacting in good faith. I think I get a lot of things that are like, oh, thanks for sharing this or that. Like, I also try to share how I'm an imperfect human, just like everybody else. And that as a public figure in non-monogamy, as an ambassador of sorts, that, non-monogamy doesn't have to be legitimized through perfection. Like it doesn't have to be a perfect way to live in order to be a legitimate way to live or a valid or sustainable way to live. Like I still experience jealousy. I've been doing this for over 10 years. You know, I still, I still get negative feelings sometimes, and I'm still like sometimes terrible at like conflict resolution. But is that much different than the average monogamous person in a monogamous relationship? Like there are whole industries about how people suck at communicating with the person that they're supposed to spend the rest of their lives with. There are whole industries about, I mean, so many aspects of relationships within monogamy, but like one non-monogamous person sneezes incorrectly and it's like, oh, see, that's wrong. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, you guys are dumb and depraved and I don't understand why you're doing this. Yeah.
It was interesting you talk about just that the different standards and why it's so important, I think, just to circle back on emphasizing the imperfectness.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like every relationship style is rife with this. You turn on one of the most popular shows on TV right now. I don't know off the top of my head, but take a wild guess and say almost all of them involve just some toxic monogamous thing happening.
Yeah. Oh God. I mean, all like the Netflix reality shows, like The Ultimatum and Love is Blind and Too Hot to Handle, like all these shows, like again, another subset of industries that are about how people are shitty at relationships. It makes money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like actually just showing again, we're all real people.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what we practice out here, like it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And things evolve, things change. It's, it's just like, it seems kind of like oversimplifying to be like, oh, we're all humans. We're just like you, but I feel like it's still some kind of some aspect of that regardless.
Yeah. And there are some non-monogamous people who do try to portray non-monogamy as being like a better alternative to monogamy. Mm-hmm. And I like to push back against that, where it's like, it's like everything else with humanity. It's all on a spectrum. There are some people who are more monogamous, some people who are more non-monogamous. And then there's a bunch of people in between. And like none of the options are inherently better or worse. And we can talk about ethics and stuff, things like, commonly called like one penis policy, that's common in non-monogamy, where it's like, one guy only and like with a female partner, but the female partner can only have interactions with other female partners, So that's, problematic. Would definitely put that in the camp of like, let's take a deeper dive into why you're doing this. But yeah, monogamy, non-monogamy, neither are more evolved or inherently better or worse than the other. Some are just inherently better or worse for specific people. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny you talk about the one penis policy, because it just reminds me of something that should have tipped me off many like decades ago of like where Dave Chappelle's content would be going. It's going to seem like a random thing, but trust me, this all fits.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of my favorite stand-up specials ever was Dave Chappelle's half hour special on HBO from like maybe 1998.
Mm.
But one of the jokes he did have on there that definitely did not age well, except for what Dave Chappelle's doing now, is like, it was all about the one penis per fantasy rule.
Oh, yes. It's like,
yeah, it's like, oh, interesting. That's, it's like, I remember just listening to the special because he also has a routine about shrooms that does age really well. just like, God, yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people disguising, things like that as merely preferences.
Mm-hmm.
People love to hide behind preferences.
Right.
Yeah. Or it's my boundary. People almost weaponizing like therapist talk, like, well, it's just a preference. It's my boundary. Why are you attacking me for my opinions and my boundaries and stuff like that? And it's very frustrating. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just my preference. No, it's blacks.
Right. It's just a preference.
Mm.
You can't. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. 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 It's terrible. It's terrible.
So we kind of broached upon pop culture here, but also a big part of our number studio experience here. You can't see if you're watching this on YouTube later, but yeah, we got a screen, usually watching old cartoons and whatnot. And Michelle, since you're here, I was like, do you have any like favorite instances of polyamory in pop culture, whether it be fictional stuff or maybe it is one of these other shows that I don't watch, but everyone I follow watches all these shows. So I feel like I'm tuned in.
Yeah. So when it comes to non-monogamy and pop culture, I don't seek it out, because most of it is bad. Most of it is infuriating, and I know I won't like it. Like a popular one, I haven't seen it, but Insecure, very popular example. However, the non-monogamous individual, as I understand it, in that show is unethically non-monogamous. And that relationship is basically a stepping stone back for the protagonist to go back like with her ex in a monogamous relationship. So lots of problems there. And so that's just one reason why I don't specifically seek it out, because I know I will almost always be disappointed by it. However, I did finally, I think a year or two ago, finally watch Sense8. And a lot of non-monogamous people and a lot of queer people love Sense8. And I was like, okay, what is this show? And it is not explicitly about polyamory. And I think that's part of one of the reasons why I like the representation so much. It's because it just kind of is. And like amongst like the eight characters, like, okay, there are some like great sexy scenes where it's like they're all in that connected way where they're like, you know, all being intimate with one another. And those are great, of course, great and great entertainment. But it's also just such a very caring and loving representation, and a level of intimacy that it just feels so natural within the show, within that universe. And there is like non-monogamy by the end as well, explicit, where like, you know, all the people involved know sort of non-monogamy. And I was like, that was very surprising. So I feel like Sense8 is almost always like my go-to with regard to representation because of how much they don't harp on the fact that it's like non-monogamy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I do like Insecure, but yeah, now that I think about that aspect of the show, it's just like, yeah, this whole angle around people sneaking around and it's really about this means to an end type thing.
The poly guy, like he doesn't really tell his partner, right? Mm. So there are things like that where it's like, yes, people have a sort of don't ask, don't tell thing, and that, you know, can work in some instances, but they just do it in such a sneaky way. And it's like, oh, I mean, this is a somewhat realistic portrayal of how a lot of people do it, you know, these days, but it's just, we already have enough portrayals of that, like sneaky non-monogamous people or people who are non-monogamous, but just in a very objectifying way, or in a very like collecting notches on a bedpost kind of way. It's like, there's already enough representation of that. Like, yes, those people exist, but yeah, where's the boring polyamorous representation? Where are the people just like having dinner together, playing board games, or just like, I don't know, they just all are grocery shopping together and it's just no drama. But I don't know, maybe that isn't good TV.
I mean, people are existing on TV doing, like, I do understand the need for, you know, you gotta have dramatic things happen in the story, but like, these things can coexist. You know, even again with like the Insecure storyline, where part of it was also just like not wanting to date a bi guy because of type of stigmatization. And on one hand,
it's a preference.
right. Like, I think it is something to like tackle, and there's a lot of ugly parts of that, do need to be tackled in there, but how you do it, how you resolve that, more importantly, you know, it's kind of a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm, I'll say, mm-hmm. I guess, Issa Rae, if you're watching, I love you. I just call this the most dangerous infomercial for a reason, but it's just like, there's opportunities for that. Yeah, so on like the flip side then, though, when you think about certain storylines where it's like, hey, if, you know, we just, I don't know, looked at polyamory as like a viable thing, if you looked at ethical non-monogamy as like a viable option, this could have resolved something. So like, I think about the X-Men, Wolverine, Cyclops, Jean Grey.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, we could have had something there. We could have. But also, then we wouldn't have this whole, you know, multi-season pining conflict storyline. Oh, no.
Right. And I think a few years ago, I mean, I'm not I'm not like super well versed with X-Men, but I feel like a few years ago there was sort of discussion around potential non-monogamy with that triangle, because I think there was like a diagram of their like living quarters or something, and something to do with like Jean Grey's living quarters being between like Wolverine and oh God, I'm blanking.
Cyclops,
yeah. and there was something notable about the fact that like there are doors in between all of them, and so it was something to do with this diagram where it's like it was different than the other living quarters in which like they can go in between each other's rooms. I did not go deeper into that. I have no idea if that ever plays like has any effect in any of the stories, but yeah, that's a perfect example of like a love triangle, which isn't an actual triangle. It's usually like a love hinge, but an actual like sort of triad thing where it's like, well, they're all superhuman. They're all, I don't know, they can learn to communicate and share. I mean, I get also all the potentials that they could have, the three of them. I mean, yeah. It doesn't have to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I agree for you. Like, they're all superhuman. They literally fight for the existence of like one, like mutants, but then like usually fighting for like humanity and whatnot. It's, they clearly have to demonstrate dealing with conflicts at, you know, an existential level.
Right.
Just
yeah.
To translate, maybe.
Right. And if like, you know, if X-Men, if mutants are supposed to be sort of like an allegory for, you know, a lot of different types of marginalization, it's like, you know, why not throw in like the monogamy and non-monogamy dynamic as well, you know, like, you know, like within queerness, queering relationships. Just talk it out like adults, you know, talk it out. Yeah. Google Calendar like the rest of us and talk it out.
I don't know. Are there any other, I guess, like examples or things that come to mind for you where you're like, this would have been a great spot for this?
I mean, so a lot of the time, the way it's set up in a lot of mononormative like media with love triangles, it's that there's a lot of toxicity. You know, people don't talk to each other. People are passive or passive aggressive. People get jealous and they think jealousy is the worst thing in the world and you can't work through it. It has to mean that things are just bad. So I would say as they exist, most quote unquote love triangles would not benefit from non-monogamy. Like Grey's Anatomy. They're all sleeping with each other in that hospital. Like they're all very intelligent people, but they can't communicate for shit. Like they, but like, wouldn't that be great to have multiple partners within that? Because like you all work long hours, you know, so you can't like see each other all the time. But if you are all like in communication with one another, like you don't have to be buddy buddy with everybody. All in communication with each other, like it's just a lot easier to get one another's needs met, and not even just in a, you know, kind of clinical way, but you know, in a very loving and caring way, and in a way that doesn't have to create so much drama, you know? And I mean, I know people tune in for that sort of drama, but I think there can also be so much, you know, there's a lot of interesting potential with regard to like, yeah, what if they were all a little bit cooler about the, you know, not so exclusive thing? You know, what if a lot of these busy people realize that like, I don't know, I can't spend all this time with you, but you know, this doctor, Dr. McDreamy can, you know, it's like, you know, like it would just all be, I don't know. But again, the way that those characters are written, they would not be good for non-monogamy because they're all just jealous. They're all terrible at communication. They're all very assumptive and but I would like to dream. I would like to dream of like a non-monogamous Grey's Anatomy kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been to the comic store in a minute, but I keep thinking to myself, like the same way, you know, just see, again, we talk about just boring, boring E&M type. Just like, hey, I live with my partner and their kids and their other partner. And we're just, you know, you see these situations, just like people are, again, just living in these, in this. And I'm just like, yeah, you could have, just put superpowers on all these people and then just make a story. Like,
right.
I feel like it's right there. And also, again, it's like, relatively untapped ground, at least that scale.
Right. And and a lot of the non-monogamous representation, I mean, like, God, I'm like obsessed with Succession like everybody else right now. Like Shiv is kind of non-monogamous, but she's a terrible person. And so it's like almost all representation, most representation of non-monogamous people are that we're like selfish or just kind of mean and kind of terrible people. The movie Her, you know, with Joaquin Phoenix, Scarlett Johansson, like that had like an kind of out of the blue. I was not expecting this when I first saw this movie, like, gosh, almost 10 years ago, that she turns out to be polyamorous. And again, it's not in the most ethical light because she isn't very forthright with him about it. However, she does have that great quote, something like, love isn't a box that, love isn't a box. And like the more you love, like the more I'm capable of loving. And it's like the more people I love, the more I'm able to love you. And I remember watching that in the theater and being like, holy shit, that's wonderful. I feel like that's how I feel. But of course, it's like this AI. It's this AI that's not human. You know, she is becoming kind of human, but she's not human. And she does it in kind of an unethical way. And it kind of breaks his heart. So she's seen as a little bit of the bad guy. But yeah, like if only that storyline also could be tweaked a little bit to be a little less mononormative. And again, with the whole some people trying to say that non-monogamy is more evolved. Like a big part of that movie was like the AI is kind of like transcending and evolving. Mm-hmm. So the non-monogamy being attached to like, oh, it's because they're these more evolved, kind of maybe more clinical beings or something. But yeah, again, that's why I don't seek out a lot of non-monogamy in media, because it's always frustrating and to one degree or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can hopefully be an area. Again, I think it's in the business terms, a growth area in media and potential.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think also, we didn't talk about this as much during this interview, but just like the communication factor,
mm-hmm.
which I think is just of like ethical non-monogamy because it's like required. Mm-hmm. You're in a relationship with one person, never mind multiple people. You got to communicate or things will break down. It's just like a practical skill for life. But with that, yeah. Is there any advice you would give people who might be interested in exploring ethical non-monogamy?
I think for people who have only ever been monogamous, like, I think, like, and I say this on my page a lot, where it's just like, just get ready to get your shit rocked. Like, it's hard. It is a very difficult thing. And even if, you know, the people involved are ready for it, there's a lot of societal pushback. There's a lot of like, well, be ready to go into the closet or go back into the closet. Sometimes like there are certain cases in which you have to be careful about like, you know, talking about it openly at work or with friends and family and stuff, because, you know, even for people with monogamous friends who are accepting, sometimes there's the whole like, they can't quite relate. At work, sometimes, you know, people get fired. And so, yeah, I think my biggest thing is just like, just do your homework, podcasts or books or social media accounts. There are so many more resources today than there were like 10 or even 5 years ago. So do your homework, like individually as well as together. Also be ready to confront certain insecurities a lot faster. And I think a lot more intensely much of the time than in a monogamous relationship. It's a lot harder to just kind of coast by on rails if you're trying to be actively non-monogamous. And I think, yeah, a lot of people have to, I think for it to work as sustainably as possible is to look at a lot of kind of normativities. Just like, you know, why do I feel this way about relationships? Why do I feel this way about love, jealousy, you know, my ideas about romance? Is there a sort of underlying possessiveness underneath, you know, relationships for me? And like, why is that? You know, where does that come from? I often, a basic question I encourage people to ask themselves is like, okay, well, who does this serve? You know, like if I'm doing this, or if I'm thinking this way, or acting this way, like who does this serve? Does this serve, I mean, not to be too broad, but like, does it serve like capitalism? Does it serve, you know, earlier talking about politics, like, does this serve like white supremacy as well? Does this serve just heteronormativity? Like, who does this serve? Is this actually serving me? Or am I trying to serve and be a part of the larger like status quo narrative? Yeah. And that was a lot, but like, it is a lot to really transition into a totally different style. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, thank you again for taking the time this afternoon. You just tell people again where they can find the page, and also just say that it's a little reference that there's cake there.
Yes. Yes. It recently was my birthday and I did share some cake. Yes.
Yeah, there's a question for that. That's not going to fit in this interview. But yeah, what's the page again for people?
Yeah, I primarily live on Instagram at polyamorouswhileasian. And I also have a website where I post everything there, so you don't have to live on Instagram, polyamorouswhileasian.com.
Awesome. Michelle Hyde, thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7, or you can catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a C.